This episode is made possible by purchasing resources to the Creation Science for Kids store.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. Have you ever studied the map of a magical land? We take a look at some of the most extraordinary verses in the Bible describing a place that only our very first parents ever got to see. Then we get to hear what Dr. Jason Lyle has to say to young people. And last but not least, learn about tornadoes. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, verses 1 through 4. This is episode 41 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus, our Creator, and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Timothy.
Hi.
And Charity.
Hi.
To follow along with what we're looking at, check out the show notes, creationscienceandnumber4kids.com/Eden. Today, we get to be back in Genesis 2, and we get to look at some of my very favorite verses. Let's open to Genesis 2, verses 8 through 14. You want to read it?
Sure. And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from thence it was parted, and became into four heads. The name of the first is Pison, that is, it which compasseth the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold. And the gold of that land is good. There is bdellium and onyx stone. And the name of the second river is Gihon. The same is it that compasseth the whole land of Ethiopia. And the name of the third river is Hiddekel. That is it which goeth towards the east of Assyria. And the fourth river is Euphrates.
Very well read. Thank you, Charity. Okay, so we've got a lot to cover here. What did he do at the beginning? The Lord God
planted a garden.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't make Adam do all the work. He didn't just say, well, here's some dirt, here's some seeds, have at it. He prepared because he knew Adam and Eve would be
new.
Yeah, that's true. So they would have to learn, even though they were really smart, they would have to figure it out. What else? What would happen if he'd just given them dirt and seeds?
They'd probably eaten it.
Yeah, because they would get
hungry.
One of the things, and I don't think we've covered this on the podcast before, many of the people who say, even though it looks like it took God only 6 days to create the world, it couldn't have really been that short, because the world and the universe looks far older than that, and God wouldn't lie to us by pretending it was looked old when it really wasn't. So it must really be old. But does this really hold water? First of all, did God create a little embryo on day one that then later slowly grew over years into Adam?
No.
No, why not? What would have happened if the egg came first instead of the chicken?
The egg would freeze.
Precisely. The egg would freeze. And what would have happened if God created a day-old fertilized human egg first?
It would freeze.
And?
Not get nourishment.
Right. It would die. So, God had to make things mature, otherwise the whole cycle of life, it would stop right where it started. So, he had to make mature people. He gave them a mature garden to live in so they could have food on the first day without having to eat the seeds and make those things go extinct in order to stay alive until things grew. He made lots of things with the appearance of age. In the Answers Book for Kids by Ken Ham, he mentions that he believes that the trees in the Garden of Eden probably had tree rings that if a scientist came along to the Garden of Eden on that first day and bored a hole through it to check the tree rings, he would say, oh, this tree is 100 years old and that tree is 200 years old and that one is 50. Because tree rings not only show age, but they actually help strengthen and support the tree. So on that note, and I've actually written an article about this, I believe that Adam and Eve had belly buttons because the ligaments that connect from your belly button goes through your stomach and helps support your abdominal. It's part of your core. So a lot of things on this planet and certainly in the universe beyond have the appearance of age, but it doesn't have to mean God was lying to us. It needed to be there in order to have a mature and functioning world. Okay, so he planted trees, not seeds. And what kind of trees did God plant?
Pleasant to the sight trees.
Yeah, what would that mean? Can you think of a pleasant to the sight tree?
Ooh, magnolia?
Yeah, magnolias are beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Oranges.
Oranges are pretty.
Oranges are yummy.
That's next. Can you think of a tree that makes you happy just to look at it?
Cherry trees.
Cherry trees are very lovely. Here in Michigan, apple trees are not pleasant to the
sight. Yes, they are.
They're all gnarly and twisted.
They have the pretty petals when they're
true. Bad. They have beautiful blossoms. But if you look at them the rest of the year, they're gnarly and twisted. Cherry trees are much more beautiful in a plant. One of my favorites are the oaks. Every time I see one, I think of fantasy stories and can picture fairies and little creatures living in it or some magical world far away. So they make me happy just to be around them. Any others? What if you go down to the tropics? What kind of trees are pleasant to the sight?
Palm trees.
Palm trees are very beautiful. Yeah. People like to look at them. So there are any number of trees that are just beautiful. And now we get to your orange trees, Timothy. What was the other kind of trees he planted?
Good for food trees.
Good for food. So can you think of some food we get from trees?
Almonds.
Right. So almonds are unusual. They are a fruit, but we actually eat
the seed.
Yeah, the pit down in the middle. So that's very unusual. So then you have all our fruits that come from trees.
Pistachios.
Okay, so what kind of food is that?
Nut.
A nut. So all kinds of nuts and then all kinds of fruits. Both the kinds that grow where it's cool, like the cherries and apples, but also the ones that grow where it's warm. What kind of fruits grow where it's warm?
Coconuts.
Coconuts. Uh-huh. Mangoes.
Pineapples.
Yeah, I suppose so. They're not exactly trees, but I bet God had some pineapples in the garden too. Because it mentions trees doesn't mean he didn't plant bushes and plants that were yummy.
Apples.
Yeah. So how would you like to go to a place like that had every kind and even things that we can't get at the grocery store because they don't travel?
Dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit. Yes. And here in Michigan, there's something called a pawpaw that you can only get if you grow it yourself or have friends at church that have them because they bruise so easily that you can't get them at the grocery store. So there are all kinds of fruits that are only good right at the tree. So he had any number, hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of fruits and nuts. And what else did he have? Right in the middle.
The tree of life.
And?
The knowledge of good and evil.
Yes, we will talk about that a lot more. But I'll just say for now, if he hadn't given that to Adam and Eve, if they could have just done whatever they wanted without ever having to make a choice, it would have been a lot like having created a robot that had to do what God wanted. So he put it right in the middle because they were very important and he wanted Adam and Eve to know that. Okay, now we get to some of my favorites. Verses. There are a couple of rivers that are mentioned in prophecy. Ezekiel got to wade through a river that's going to be when Jesus comes back and is king of the world. So right at the end of Ezekiel, an angel takes him and he walks across one coming out from under the temple in Jerusalem. And then in Revelation, there's another river where we have
in the middle of the temple.
Yeah. Well, there's no temple in the eternal kingdom.
In heaven?
Yeah, flowing in New Jerusalem and then flowing out.
Flowing out to the tree of life?
Yeah, and the tree of life is growing on both sides. Very good. But here is the first river that God cared about and told us. So this river went out of Eden to water the garden and split into four heads. So there are a couple of things we can learn from this. In Florida, we went and saw the manatees. And another time we had gone to visit a spring. Do you remember what the water, how those rivers started, where the manatees were and the spring where we could go swimming and canoeing?
Yeah.
Where did the water come from?
Another river? A pond, was it?
It was a pond. And where did the water from the pond come from?
Another river?
No, it did not. Remember at the manatees, right at the top where we saw the one mama and the baby and they slowly swam out.
The ground.
It came out of the ground. It just bubbled up quite a lot of water, hundreds and thousands of gallons a day come out just out of the ground. That seems to be the way this river got started. It just flowed up out of the ground, perhaps if it was like in Florida, out through the sand. And so I always picture that it was this beautiful, clear ground temperature water, so neither too hot nor too cool. Now, one of the things, there are no rivers today that split apart into four different rivers like this one. So this was extraordinary. What else do you know? If a river is flowing away from Eden, what do you know about Eden in its topography, which is how?
It's up high.
It's up high. Yeah, this will come in when we get to how the flood worked, that it seems to be that people lived up high. And this is a verse that certainly seems to give that impression. We started out at the highest point of four rivers, and from there people spread out. So it does seem that Eden was at a pretty high elevation. Now, we've got the name of the rivers, and what's cool is it tells us about these lands that no one has ever seen. And what were they able to get out of the land of Havilah, where the first river went, Pison went?
Gold.
Gold and bdellium and onyx stone. So they could get precious metals and precious stones out of the ground very quickly, so quickly that it had happened well before Noah's time.
They could make a crown.
Mm-hmm. We do get to some interesting things. The second river, Gihon, there's no name after the flood with this name, but it went around the whole land of
Ethiopia.
Does that mean that second river that nobody's ever heard of flows through northeastern Africa?
No.
And the third one goes toward the east of Assyria. Assyria is north of Syria, which is north of Israel. Does that mean the third river somehow got over there?
No.
And the fourth river is Euphrates.
Where's Tigris?
Excellent question. Okay, so here's what's going on. There are many people who say Eden must have been somewhere near the Middle East, somewhere near Babylon, perhaps, but we've never found any archaeological remains, so it must have been a myth, because we can't find the remains of Eden. Do we, who read not just the first couple of chapters of Genesis, but also read about the flood of Noah, expect to find the Garden of Eden?
No.
No.
No. One of the things, if it was located near Babylon, Babylon has like 20,000 feet, 9,000 meters of sediment, rocks that were laid down in water and full of fossils before you get down to bedrock. Even if Eden was located in what was more or less today Babylon, it would have been so buried we would never find any remains of those trees. Wherever this land was, when the flood happened, it was completely destroyed. There's no sign of it whatsoever. So then why do we have names like Ethiopia, Assyria, and the Euphrates? To figure out what this could be, I looked up about another river that will give us an idea of the kinds of things that could be going on. Have you ever heard of the Douglas River?
No.
Not really.
No. Once I had a children's CD that mentioned that one of the boys' name was Douglas, that the name Douglas came from somebody living next to the River Douglas. It turns out the word means black water in Gaelic, which is what they speak in Northern, in Ireland, and then up in Scotland. Turns out there are two Douglas Rivers in Scotland alone. But that's not the only place. You can go to the Douglas River in Australia, in Canada, in Tasmania. There's a River Douglas in England, and there's a Douglas River in New Zealand. So if you hear somebody say, there is the Douglas River that flows into this and such, do you know where it is to look for archaeology?
No.
So what's going on? Why would there be so many Douglas Rivers?
Because people like to name stuff the same thing.
Yes. And if you notice, Canada and Australia were both what? How did they get started in their current countries?
Great Britain.
Great Britain. The English started those originally as colonies. I was kind of surprised there's not a Douglas River in the United States, because we also have all kinds of British names. We do have a Douglas Dam in Tennessee. Now, one of the interesting things also is the Douglas River in New Zealand isn't even named after the Douglas River in Scotland. It's named after a guy, Charles Edward Douglas, who was named after the river in England. And also, there's a Douglas Dam called the Douglas Weir in South Africa, and a town. Both of them are named after General Sir Robert Percy Douglas, who was named after the river in Scotland. So you see, just because it has the same name, must it be the same place and thing?
No.
Not at all. What's going on?
People just like to name stuff after other things.
Yeah, I had realized this was going on. My family once lived in a little town or a little village called Hartford. It was not Hartford, Connecticut, but was probably named after Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut was not the original. It was named after Hartford in England. You go out into the Western United States, you can have places named after places, named after places, named after places. You can have a fourth generation. Why do people do that? I found an article on the state of Maine, and it talked about it very clearly. The name of the article is, why are so many Maine towns named after foreign countries and cities? Here's what they said. Place of settlers' origin. This is the most obvious answer, and it applies to many of the towns in Maine that are named after places in England. When somebody had to leave their place where they were born and move to a new place in the Americas, they wanted a little taste of home. So they would name their new town that they were just starting after their old town where they were born. So it's a very common practice from the beginning of time, and even, well, we're not founding many new towns today, but when people are moving into a new area, it's very common for people to name their new place after the old one. Going back to Genesis, when somebody says, okay, Eden must have been somewhere near Babylon because you've got Assyria and you've got the Euphrates and we can't find it, therefore it didn't exist. What is it they're missing? What have they forgotten or don't want to think about because they don't want to believe the Bible?
The flood.
The flood, and what about the people who started naming things right after the flood?
They like to name things after where they're from.
Where they're from, and to remember, because otherwise, if we didn't have the Bible, who else on the planet remembers the land of Pison and Gihon, or the original Assyria, or that there was a river Euphrates flowing from Eden? Would anybody else have remembered that? No, everyone else lost it. And one more thing about Assyria. Before the flood, Assyria was a place. After the flood, Assyria was the name of one of Noah's grandsons, and then eventually a people group and empire that was named after his descendants. I looked up that word to see what it meant. So Assyria itself has, we're not entirely sure what it means, but here are some of the meanings that it most likely meant. A level plain, so a flat space of land, or to go straight on, or a step. So it kind of gives you the idea that that land of Assyria might have been a plateau of some sort. But also to go straight on, sometimes meant to be righteous. So that could have been why Shem named his second son after that place that he knew, because it had the double meaning of a high place and of being upright and going straight ahead, kind of like having integrity might mean today. So named his son Integrity. So when we look at this, we can picture a place that no one today will ever see and remember what it is we lost that God had given to Adam and Eve. It was a beautiful place. It was a fascinating place. And we get just a taste of it because God preserved this in his Bible. All right, before we move on to Dr. Lyle's interview, I have a joke for you today. Why was Adam a famous runner?
I don't know.
because he was first in the human race.
Huh?
All right. So now we're getting to the third of my interviews. This one I knew for sure I would want to collect for you guys when I saw that Dr. Jason Lyle would be at the Creation Research Society conference. And it was kind of interesting. I had never met him in person before. He doesn't know me from Eve, but I kind of just had to walk up to him between two of the sessions and say, "Can I interview you for a minute, please?" And he said, "Sure. Right after the next session, I'll give you a couple minutes." And I got to talk to him face to face. It was very exciting. Here we go. What I'd like to know is, what would you tell a young person considering science or considering what to do with their life if they have any kind of, if they enjoy science in school?
Okay, well, science, for me, it's, I've always loved science, and it's because I have a Christian worldview, and I see science as studying the way that God upholds the creation that he made. And so when you study science, you're studying something about how God thinks and how he works.
Right, yes.
And that's delightful, and it's very enjoyable, and it's interesting. It's a lot of fun. There's a danger in it, though, because at least in the United States of America and around the world as well, when students go out and they're taught science, they're mm-hmm. also taught things, they're taught that certain things are true that are in fact not science at all.
Yeah.
Things like evolution, millions of years, the Big Bang.
Right.
And they're taught these things using words that sound sort of scientific.
Yes. Oh.
And so a lot of students get confused, and they confuse things like Big Bang and evolution. They think those things are scientific.
Science.
They're
mm-hmm.
not. And so I would encourage students who are wanting to go into science to study the kinds of things that we produce at the Institute for Creation Research or our sister ministry Answers in Genesis.
Right.
Get some of those materials and read through those and see why it is that evolution really isn't credible as a scientific mm-hmm. idea. It really isn't. And the Big Bang as well. And the millions of years even. Those just aren't really good science.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they go off to the university or then they'll be able to, you know, even when the professor says, okay, well, now let's talk about the Big Bang, they'll be able to say, okay, now we're switching from science to mythology.
Right.
Is what it is.
True.
Yeah.
Now, what if they're saying, well, then I'll just go into another field besides science because of all the assumptions that go into it?
You know, that's actually a legitimate choice, and it really depends on the student.
Okay.
I would say if that's the only reason, if you just think, well, I'm just, you know, I don't want to put up a fight.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got to tell you, if you're going to be a Christian, you're going to have to fight at some
this
point.
This is true.
And I don't mean physically. I just mean that you're going
to
have to stand up and give a defense of the faith.
Yeah.
We need scientists. We
yes.
really do. And so I think if youngsters have an interest in that, I would really encourage them to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
But if some people say, you know, it's not in my nature. That's not who
sure,
I am.
Of course.
But I love these other things. Well, that's fine. You know,
yeah.
God gives different people different gifts and different
mm-hmm.
Interests. And I think it's fine to pursue that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I have one question. What's your favorite Bible verse on creation?
There's
I know
many to choose from.
One that pops in your head.
Of course, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth.
Yeah, why?
And that's kind of a summary statement that really characterizes, that really tells you the most important things about the universe. It
yes.
tells you that there is a God. It tells you that he's all powerful. If he can make heaven and earth, he can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He makes all those hundreds of billions of stars and so on, calls them all by their names.
Right.
So it tells you that it tells you that there's a beginning, that God made it. Of course, if you read on in Genesis, we find it's very good. We learn more about the nature of God. But it also tells us that God is sovereign.
Mm.
And, just because he's...
Which, for kids, a 10-year-old.
Right, yeah.
What's
so
sovereignty?
It means that he's in charge. He's in control of everything. Because
uh-huh.
if he made the whole universe, then he has the right to make the rules.
That's right.
And that means that when he gives us these commandments, we really have to take those seriously. It's
yes.
not just like, you know, when I tell my friend to do something, he doesn't have to do it. He can reject that. I'm not sovereign. But when God tells you to do something, you better
yeah.
do it, because he's the creator of the universe, mm-hmm. and therefore he owns you, and
mm-hmm.
he's going to hold you accountable to what you've done, which means he'll you know, if you haven't received him as your savior, you're going to have to deal with the fact that you haven't obeyed him as your Lord.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lyle, pleasure. And I really appreciate especially what you're doing in apologetics.
Well, thanks.
And
appreciate
everything.
That.
Thanks.
Sure, yeah.
Wasn't that cool?
Yeah.
What do you like about what he said?
How he likes science.
Right? And what if you're scared because people might be mean to you because you believe that God created instead of evolution? Can you escape being treated meanly by just studying
something
music?
Else?
Yeah, something else?
No.
No. So you might as well
put up a fight.
Yeah. What kind of fight?
Spiritual fight.
True. Right. Pray for people. Learn the truth. be able to speak clearly and defend it. Okay, did you catch what he said about Genesis 1:1 teaches us about God's sovereignty? What did he say that meant? If I tell my friend something to do, does he have to do it?
No.
But if God tells you what to do,
you have to do it.
Because?
He's God.
What does Genesis 1:1 tell us about God gets to be God because?
He created everything.
He created everything. So it's his. We're playing on his board game. He invented the rules. We have to do what he says or suffer the consequences. That was so exciting. So thank you, Dr. Lyle, and God bless your work. All right. Now it's time for something a bit scary, isn't it, Timothy?
I got to tell you about tornadoes.
All right. Here in our area, a couple of weeks ago, what did everybody have to do?
Go into their basement because there was a tornado that touched down in the city.
Mm-hmm. So, you decided
to do a report on tornadoes.
Okay, and what did you find out?
Tornadoes happen all over the world except for Antarctica.
But what places, kinds of places are just right for tornadoes?
30 and 50 degrees parallel.
Right, what does that mean? Does that mean they always run in a straight line next to each other? Remember, on the map, where is 0 degrees parallel? The equator. It's how far north or south you are. And what do you call the poles? How many degrees?
90 degrees.
Right. So 30 to 50 degrees on the parallel is not in the tropics, just above where it's warm all year, where you're starting to get four seasons, up to where it's fairly cold, but not quite subarctic. So which country wins the gold medal for having the most tornadoes?
The United States.
Right. How many do we average a year here?
1,000.
Yeah. Which one comes in second?
Canada.
Right. And how many do they get?
About 100.
Yeah. So we have 900 more tornadoes on average than the next country. Okay. But we aren't the only place because they happen all over. Which other countries are known for having tornadoes?
Argentina.
Yeah, where is that? What continent?
South America.
Right, and?
Bangladesh.
Right, which is next to?
India.
India, yeah. What is just north of Bangladesh? Do you remember?
The Himalaya Mountains.
Right, and the Himalaya Mountains are very?
Cold.
And the Indian Ocean right underneath Bangladesh is very?
Cold.
No, the Indian Ocean.
Warm.
Okay, and what are some other, what's the other countries that get sun?
New Zealand gets about 20 tornadoes a year.
Uh-huh.
But they also happen in Europe, South Africa, and southern China.
Right. Okay. What is it about these places that make it easier for a tornado to form?
They usually form in a thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm. Where do we get our word tornado?
From the Spanish word tronada, which means thunderstorm.
Right, because it's almost always how they form. Okay, so what's going on in a thunderstorm that sometimes will cause a tornado?
The warm, moist air starts out near the ground, but then it rises.
Right, because warm air goes up, and what's moist mean?
Humid.
Which means it's got lots of?
Water.
Water. So you got warm, wet air that comes up. And what's above it?
Cold air.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when the warm water rises up into that cold air? Cold air does what?
It cools water droplets. And they turn into rain.
Mm-hmm. And what happens?
They fall.
Mm-hmm. As it's falling, what starts to happen?
More warm air gets sucked up.
And then it starts making a kind of loop. What happens?
Cool rain gets sucked into the loop.
Air. Mm-hmm. The air going up. And what also happens because the cool air is going one direction and the warm air is going another direction. So
it starts to twist.
Right. And remember, what else is common along with tornadoes? What else can cause a lot of damage?
Hail.
Hail. And what is hail? Do you know what it is?
It's ice.
Yeah. And hail can be very tiny or it can get really big. How does it get big?
by getting crushed together?
No, that's a good guess. Okay, so we haven't covered hail. Hail is when the rain falls and it goes up high enough that it turns to ice. And then the ice starts to fall again, but with that warm air going up, before the ice can melt, it gets pulled back up, collects some more water around it, drops, collects more water. The more it does that, never falling to the ground, the bigger it gets. Like how they make a jawbreaker, where they pour on a little candy and roll it around, and then they'll pour on a little more candy. The longer the more you do that, the bigger it gets. Hail is exactly like that. It just doesn't taste as good and hurts even more when it falls
in
your head.
I remember they made one that was the size of a football.
Or a basketball?
A basketball.
Yeah.
And then they cracked it in half.
Yeah, praise the Lord, that almost never happens with hail. But yes, that's exactly what's going on. So you've got this cycle of air swirling around up there, and then it starts twisting sideways. What does it form first? Before it's a proper tornado,
it forms into a funnel cloud.
Right, and it becomes a tornado when
it touches the ground.
Right. Okay, now, most tornadoes aren't terribly strong. What are the weakest tornadoes? How fast are they spinning sideways?
40 to 70 miles per hour.
Right. So that's about 110 kilometers an hour. But then you get stronger ones, and very rarely the strongest tornadoes can get to spin how fast?
260 miles per hour.
Right. For that, you're talking around close to 400 kilometers an hour. That is crazy fast. So what does it do? When it's spinning like that, what happens to the ground it touches?
It gets blown up.
Mm-hmm. What did you read about one of the strongest tornadoes? What did it do?
It ripped up 1 mile of road.
Yeah, it actually sucked the pavement right off the road. It was that strong. And those kind will obliterate buildings, so nothing above ground is still standing. Did you see how that one picture showed where the tornado had damaged?
Most tornadoes go in a straight line.
And are they huge like a hurricane where it covers hundreds of miles?
No.
Just 100 feet to
100 yards or meters.
Yeah, most of them aren't very wide. Every once in a while there's one that's much wider, but those are very rare, don't happen every year. So, what do you think, Timothy? When God made the Garden of Eden, do you think there were tornadoes?
No.
No. One of the things that we can tell from the fossil record that the sea creatures were all very happy. It was mostly a warm, shallow marine environment. We also know the flood covered the whole world, so there weren't any Himalayas. Like there in Bangladesh is in trouble because it got those huge, tall, cold mountains. Eden was at the top, and it had all kinds of fruit trees. It was still warm. So if you have warm, comfortable temperatures everywhere on Earth, you would never get tornadoes. So that's something that changed when the flood came and messed things up royally. Thank you. Don't forget, you can find links to all the things we've talked about today by visiting the show notes page, creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/Eden for the Garden of Eden, or /041 for episode 41. Oh, I want to give some special thanks to Sherry, that's spelled differently from mine, Salvador, and Devin for letting me know with their money that our work has been a blessing. Monthly podcast hosting is a separate expense and costs more than running a website. And my web hosting is a major bill coming due next spring. Thanks to you, we're getting closer to having this ministry pay for itself so we can keep the show going and the website live. If you would like to give some money to help pay for the podcasting, you'll find it really easily. I think I have it at the bottom of all my pages. Sorry about that. But it just uses PayPal. Anything you're able to give is such a blessing. And really, for me, it's more just knowing you care and you appreciate us. That matters the most of all. Thank you. While you're visiting the website, I'd like to ask for your help. If you know someone who might enjoy listening to this podcast and checking out my website, would you let them know for us? Every article I do, including today's show notes, has share buttons on the side to make it super easy for you to pass on to your friends on Facebook or by email. You have amazing power to help your friends find out the truth with just a click of a button. Plus, if you want to encourage us, leaving the show a rating on iTunes is a great way to do that and helps families looking for new podcasts to find us. Thanks. Has your family signed up for our weekly email newsletter? Once a week, I share interesting creation resources I've run into, as well as the link to that week's article, which means you won't have to bother remembering how to find the show notes again. Just as exciting, when you sign up, I give you access to the amazing collection of kids' creation resources I've discovered over the past 4.5 years. Whether you want to play games, find a science curriculum, plan a vacation, or watch fun videos, you'll find the links in a flash on my page. You can sign up in a couple seconds from the show notes. But to see why I care so much about making creation science fun for kids, visit creationscience4kids.com/kidsresources.
Do you like science? Got a subject you want to learn about? Or maybe you like telling stories?
Remember, it's super easy to turn your smartphone into a recorder. And if you send me a report, story, joke, or interesting idea, I might use it in a future show. Head over to creationscienceandnumber4kids.com/podcast to find out what to do.
Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.